because you're jumping back into the gap. I let the coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebound.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver, the founder, CEO, and creative mind behind BasketballImmersion.com. This is the podcast where you will hear real basketball coaching conversations. Whether you are a new or experienced coach at any level of basketball, these coaching conversations will give you practical ideas to stimulate your coaching and make what you do even better. Without any more delay, let's share the game. I'm excited to have a basketball coaching conversation with Dusty May, the new head coach at Florida Atlantic University. Coach, congratulations on the new position.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate you having me on the show, on the podcast.
It's been wonderful. We've had some good conversations this past summer, and I know this is going to be gold for people to be able to listen to. Two people that love basketball and love talking about strategy and all these different things, but I think we got to focus on you're a new coach. You're taking over a program. This is the first time you've been a head coach since AAU basketball. So, coach, what is literally the first action item for you?
When I got the job, the first action item was evaluating who are the most important people to reach out to as far as their current roster and also with recruiting. There's only so many hours in the day, only so many calls you can make, only so much emotional energy you have. So the first thing was just focusing on the right people to connect with, and hopefully I was able to do that.
Well, and based on your background, I mean, you've been an assistant at a number of schools. Obviously, you've been with Coach White at two different schools and most recently at Florida. So I would think that you'd be able to get to the people you'd want to get to pretty quickly in that way. So let's focus on the current roster first. So, and without getting into specifics, obviously, but there's players that are on your roster right now that you didn't recruit and may not fit where you're going to go in the future. How do you handle that? Because that's a situation that many high school coaches would face, AAU coaches would face in taking over a new program.
Well, it was a roster that was, there was some transition anyway. So I think there were seven returning players and a couple signees. And a few of the signees, we had conversations and we were out of days to go on the road recruiting. So the first week was really just getting on the phone and connecting with those guys. And a couple of them expressed interest in maybe looking at some other schools. And I said maybe that, you know, it might be best for both of us just to go our own way. So that freed up several scholarships because those guys wanted out. And then there were a couple guys here that decided that once we signed a couple guys, they probably wouldn't have an opportunity to play a lot. So they moved on. And the guys that are here now, they've been great. They've worked hard. And as far as not signing them, I could care less. They're our guys. This is our team. So none of that matters as long as they buy in. They'll be evaluated the same as the guys that we've recruited.
Well, and that's a great message. I mean, ultimately, the players that are staying with you are the ones that want to be there. And they're the ones that you're going to develop within your system and within your culture and to be able to build them. So in terms of improving the roster then, I mean, coming off a losing season, the culture change immediately is going to be different because of your energy and the new coach and all that. But in terms of improving the roster, what are you focusing on right now?
Well, we're done now. The first order of business was getting guys that I focused on the young guys, the high school kids. There were a few local kids and a few guys in Florida that I thought would be really good players at this level. So we focused on the young guys first for the future. And then once we got a few of those guys in the fold, and then we went after a couple junior college guys, a couple grad transfers, and really tried to fill some immediate needs after getting the foundation pieces done.
And that's in terms of recruiting. So then in terms of the players that you actually have returning on the roster that are on campus with you now, you're able to work out with them right when you take over the job, or how does that work for your
role? We did workouts for 3 weeks when we took over the job, and we had 2 hours a week. And going into the workouts, it was the first couple was simply them evaluating me and me evaluating them. The staff wasn't here yet. It was a different situation. And I even wanted to see them play a little bit because the guys who were here didn't play in games last year, so there wasn't synergy. Other than one starter, there really wasn't much film to see on these guys other than their high school highlight tapes and things like that. So I want to evaluate them evaluate me, and just kind of put out a couple of things that are important for our program going forward: the energy, the communication, the intensity, things like that, more than tactical skill.
Well, it's interesting because I get asked this question now that I'm supposedly a veteran coach, but by coaches that take over other programs, and they ask me, what should they focus on? Because there's so many things. obviously you can focus on, as you said, limited within your time. And the general sentiment I try to convey to them in a much nicer way, but let's just be specific, is you got to get your players. I mean, the number one thing that's going to help you be successful is that you got to get better players, more talented players, or the players that suit your philosophy. And at the sacrifice of X's and O's, the focus has to be on getting those players. Is that the same philosophy for someone like you taking over a program like that?
Chris, that was my only agenda. We hired the 3 full-time assistant guys who can recruit immediately. And with all things pointing forward to getting a roster in place for next year and one that we would have some continuity over the year. So, yeah, there really wasn't I had the 30-day plan, the 90-day plan, all that stuff. But when I got this job, it was all about the roster. There really weren't any other concerns getting out of the community. You naturally meet people because you're new and they want to be around. They come and see you. But all energy was focused on the roster, without a doubt.
Yeah, and a lot of those other things come later. And a lot of those other things, to be frank, they build because your roster is getting better and you're being more successful and, you know, you're drawing more energy to the program. And all those things can build later. But the bottom line is you've got to have better players to be successful. So that's fascinating to hear. Now, I think what people sometimes overestimate at all levels of coaching is the X's and O's part of it. Is that the case that, you know, I get the end of the day, you can improve your roster through recruiting, you can improve your roster through your player development, and whatever X's O's you do, they're going to be better because you have better players.
No question. And the way the game is going, we don't want to be a possession by possession team anyway. So we want to score in transition. We want to be good out of timeouts. But for the most part, we want it to be a free-flowing game where it's not just an X's and O's situation. It's more of concepts. And even, you know, Nate Oates from the Florida Clinic. Nate and I talked about it this spring, and he said his operations guy was teasing. They had 100 plays in. He said, but I really don't want to run any plays. I want to be able to play. And that's why it gives their guys incentives to get out and play. And Buffalo scored a lot of points, and he's done a great job at a similar level. So that's one thing that we did at Florida and Louisiana Tech. We didn't have a million plays. We wanted to play out of concepts and live in our guys' strengths. So without a doubt, I'm just now diving into the X's and O's. And I've always been a basketball junkie and studied basketball at all levels. So now I'm challenging myself not to overcomplicate this stuff because I've liked so many things over the years. Figure out what our guys do well and let them play and be able to stay out of their way a little bit and not overcoach them.
Well, that's great advice. And you know, I align with that philosophy as well in terms of, you know, letting your players be free and letting them play and, you know, starting from a basic structure. And then, as you said, have some automatics and different things that happen. So it's going to be fun to watch you develop that. And I know that's such a unique thing for a coach who's so passionate about learning the game. And I know you're a great learner, but you just have so much in your head. I mean, you can't possibly be an assistant at the levels you've been at and be around the people you've been at without having notebooks and notebooks and plays of all the best ideas you could ever get. And now you have to bring it down to actionable things. How does that process work for you?
Well, the first week, every year since I've been in coaching for the last, well, since we've been using Sports Tech, I'll give Sports Tech a little bit of a plug. I've kept a database of favorite plays from college, NBA, international basketball. Favorite baseline out of bounds, sideline out of bounds, defensive strategy. You know, now you're seeing all the triple switching and the scram switching in the playoffs. So all this stuff. So you have all these databases, and then you have notebooks a mile high. And I was laughing the first week. Our guys, they played a controlled tempo last year, and I was really struggling getting them to play fast, push it, just play it at a quick tempo. And I said, fellas, I'm not going to lie. I have a stack, and I raised my hand about 4 feet off the ground of plays and situations. We can run all these and just memorize plays all practice. Guys can get it and go and create and make plays. Which do you want to do? Because it's really up to you. And they said, no, coach, we don't want to run all those plays. So I said, all right. That actually helped the tempo. We've laughed about it a few times since.
Well, it's pretty much the answer you'd expect from any player. But, you know, but the reality is, as you know, and I've experienced many times, is that, you know, players say they want to play fast, but the reality of playing fast is quite different than just saying it. And how are you going to take steps towards really, again, emphasizing that philosophy, but also, you know, establishing that identity as a program? Because when it comes down to the pressure of the games, often I find coaches who say they want to play fast end up controlling the game.
Working for Coach White the last several years, that's one thing, he stuck to it in the tempo and not calling as many timeouts late in the game. It's just pushing before the defense gets set. It's been something that we've done for so long. It's almost ingrained in who I am. So that part shouldn't be a big challenge because it's how we've played. And even people have questioned our shot selection at some point, but our guys have proven in practice that they're capable of making those shots and they practiced them. And so that shouldn't be a problem with me.
Coach, you may not have seen this, but I actually posted three shots from one of your tournament games on Twitter in a sequence and asked coaches about the shot selection of each shot. I'm going to do a blog on that, to be honest, because I was surprised by some of the answers and I guess not surprised at the same time. And personally, I loved all three shots and they were all shot early, basically off of a one pass catch and shoot situation. And yeah, I just find that, again, coaches who say it, they want to play fast. I mean, the reality is you've got to be okay with sometimes your players not making the decision you might make as a coach, but you ultimately have to give them trust and give them faith. How hard is that when you don't know your roster?
That part is going to be tough, but also that's what we have to do this summer in evaluating those shots. And going back to what you said, I saw those shots and those were, I think Kolachoff, his highest percentage shot for us last year at Florida was the pitch ahead three, the one pass three with him in transition. And he would shoot it from 25 to 27 feet. And we do a lot of self-scouting where what's a good shot for you? Well, it's one we've seen you make. And that shot with him running full speed, stopping at 25 feet was a great shot unless he rushed it, unless he just got it out of his hand too quick, like it was a hot potato. And so those are the things we talk about. Look, on this shot, this is a great shot as long as you don't rush it. Now, if you have to rush it to get it out of your hands, that's you're not shooting a good percentage on that shot. Now that's the one you shot fake it. You just look at the rim, and then you get into a drive and kick situation. So both were good, just helping him understand what was a great shot. And then the spinoff on that, 2 years ago, our video department of Florida was, you saw it, they were great. They did a study, every shot Kayvon Allen took for the year and then broke it down. I think we did seven categories. In his percentage of shots, his percentage he makes. His highest percentage shot was transition, which was breakaway layups, one-on-one in transition, two-on-one. So obviously that's a pretty high percentage shot. His second highest percentage shot was a step back three going left. His third highest percentage shot was a step back three going right. So the corner threes, the top of the key threes, the catch and shoot, he wasn't very good catch and shoot anywhere. Now, if he caught it and faced you up and eyed it up and then pulled it, that was a pretty good shot for him. But it was crazy to look at what were the best shots for him. And we're getting guys at 18 to 22 years old. They're already pretty darn good at certain things, or we wouldn't have recruited them. So half the battle will be figuring out what our guys are already good at and letting them do that without messing them up.
Well, I love that. And again, I think that's got to be part of the overall picture of kind of how the game is evolving and how players are developing. And they're all developing with this positionless mentality, I would assume now, in terms of the grassroots on up. And as coaches, I think we've got to find a way to take advantage of that. And clearly early in transition, an open shot is going to be often your best shot because it's really hard to score at your level. And we'll specifically talk about your level in the half court. Did you guys have percentages of half court versus transition in terms of scoring percentages?
Yeah, I was cleaning out my desk yesterday. There are a couple of sheets that our video guy, Bryce Douglas, I'll give him a plug. He would break down every shot, every play, every situation from transition to secondary to the breakdowns, what happened. So we had the percentages of every game. We had it broken down in the last five games, and then we had it for the season. So we studied those numbers, what we weren't doing well at, what plays we thought were good, but the numbers said weren't good. And then we would get deeper into that where he also tagged every clip. So if we were struggling with a set that we liked, we went back to it, said, all right, the numbers say we're not scoring on this, but we're getting what we consider good shots. So that's still good, despite the analytics saying that they weren't good shots. So we used that in-house. We didn't present a lot of that stuff to the team other than the tough mid-range shots. We talked about mid-range as far as if you're going towards the basket in rhythm, a mid-range shot is a good shot for Jalen Hudson and those guys because they made it. Now, the mid-range shots where they're going, their balance was going away from the basket. They didn't make those, so we challenged our guys not to shoot those. So usually after every game, I would come down and tell Jalen, whoever, hey, we were 1-for-9 on mid-ranges last night. Let's focus on it. Let's go ahead and get in the paint and finish strong or kick it out and get in another driving kick, as opposed to just settling for a mid-range going away from the basket.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. And, you know, the other part that I would ask, and I ask of my players, is what do your teammates think of the shots you're shooting? Right. Like if I ask one of your players shoots a shot and then I ask one of their teammates, I say, hey, was that a good shot? Based on what you're saying, your teammates would have a good feel for what type of shot that was. And it's not a selfish shot if your team believes in that shot. And that ultimately defines shot selection more than anything we can do as a coach.
We want to be great offensive rebounding. So if I can't anticipate what shot you're going to shoot, then it's probably not a good shot. After playing with you every day in workouts and practice, I should be able to anticipate what shots you're going to shoot and work for rebounding position in advance.
That's a great point. Understanding offensive rebounding value of understanding what shot your teammates are likely to shoot. There's no question the anticipation part of it's important. Let's transition a little bit because I know, again, coaches that run high school or AAU programs and really people in general, this is one of my things that I often don't like going out with my wife to places where, you know, I'm going to be around people that don't know a lot about what I do because I always get asked the question, so what do you do all day? Like you're a basketball coach, what do you do all day? Well, coach, what do you do all day now? If you're in a dead period right now, yeah.
Well, so we're on campus now.
So what are the next steps for you after we talked about that first item, which is getting your roster together?
Right now, our day consists of the NCAA. They extended our period with our guys to 4 hours a week on the court. So we will do 4 one-hour sessions right now. And so yesterday, we were on the floor for 2 hours. We'll review that film to have some points going into today's workouts. I'll try to read 30 minutes a day at some point, either in the morning or the night. The NBA playoffs, if they're on, obviously you take a 3-hour window to watch the playoff games closely. Watch a little bit of film, whether it's something you did last year, a database or a drill database, we database our drills, what drills make sense for us. Try to watch the team from last year. We actually yesterday as a staff had on the Marshall Western Kentucky championship game just to see the two best teams in the Conference USA championship. So a couple hours a day on miscellaneous film and then recruiting, obviously talking to coaches. Now that our roster's for this year, now we're going to start focusing on 2019 and 2020. We really hadn't done anything in 2019 for the most part because we were so focused on 2018. So now we can kind of shift towards the future, guessing what we're going to need, what positions that we're going to need, and then always relationships with the guys we've signed and the guys on campus. That's one thing I learned a couple years ago at Florida. We replaced Billy Donovan, who was loved by his players, loved by everyone, and we knew we couldn't rush the relationships. They were obviously going to be skeptical of some guys that came in from a major level that hadn't won multiple national championships and didn't have the instant credibility. So we just had to take the relationship part one step at a time, get them to trust us, and realize that you can't speed that up. And it's the same thing. And I haven't tried to be fake with our relationships with our guys. Just spend time with them and get to know them and just let it grow as it would be with it with a normal relationship.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you can't speed it and be genuine. There's great value to both those points in forming relationships. And again, you're going to be around your team enough to be able to have a lot of those informal talks as well that build those relationships. So let's dig deeper into some of the things you said there because a lot of interesting things to be able to dig into. When you talk about doing your workouts with your players yesterday and today, what focus is it in terms of individual skill development versus team concepts at this point for you as a new coach?
60 minutes, we'll break it down in segments, and I don't have yesterday's schedule in front of me. Where we'll put a coach out, we have one group of two and one group of three. We have five guys on campus. The perimeter group, we'll put a coach out and just have him on the floor so he can talk. Help our guys communicate through our drive and kick reads. Where I drive here, how do you react to me? I drive here, how do you react to me? What are options here? Is this a good time just to get a quick swing and rub cut? Or is this a chance to get into a drive and kick? So just putting a coach out there with two guys and helping them with the concepts where hopefully in 2 weeks there won't be any thinking and maybe they can teach the new guys. And then, but a big portion of it is just the skill work. We'll do 10 minutes of ball handling and finishing. We'll do 10 minutes of different types of shots that we know they'll get out of our offense, that from the corner to the wing, read a closeout out of ball screen, you know, the normal ball screen stuff that you know you're going to get a lot of. Dribble at, if your guy's even or above you, it's an automatic backdoor, then we're into the next action. If he's below you, then we're into dribble handoff, and maybe it's a ball screen after that, or maybe it's just get in the paint. So just teaching a lot of concepts and getting those guys to where they're just playing and not thinking, but reading and reacting to what's happening on the floor and the spacing of it.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's great for coaches to understand kind of what goes into those type of workouts and, you know, and the focus that the concepts of individual skill and, you know, team concepts blend together in every way. So there's purpose to everything. I think the other thing that you said that I want to dig deeper into, which I'm a big believer in, is that you said you watched the two best teams in your league last year. How much of your philosophy with this program that you're taking over is going to be based on, we got to beat the best team in our league. So is that going to dictate some of your decisions in terms of style of play, in terms of recruiting, in terms of overall philosophy, or is it pretty much, you know, we're going to do our thing and then hope that that gets to that level?
I think there's a balance. And fortunately for me and Kyle Church, who's on our staff, we were at La Tech where we won this league the last couple of years we were in it. So and that was only 3 years ago. So we're not too far removed from knowing the teams and what they do well. And felt like there we played differently than almost everyone else, played a different type of defense. We 2-2-1 pressed back to a switching man defense where we'd switch 1-4 at all times, 1-5 at times, and switched it up out into the passing lanes. And then offensively, we spread it out, played fast, and played really positionless basketball. When we left, we felt like we had a team of 6'4 to 6'9 guys that were, and we'd play a couple different point guards at the same time. And then a couple of those 6'7, 6'8 guys, Eric McCree, who's with the Jazz, a couple of guys like that who can really play different positions, stretch the floor. So we feel like we're familiar with the league already. We just wanted to see what most recently has been the most successful. Because, like I said, we're pretty familiar with the way most of the teams played last year. Now there's five new coaches in the league, so there's going to be a lot of turnover with style of play. Coach Sanchez at Charlotte, well, I'm sure, will be doing a lot of the Virginia stuff. FIU will have the Havoc. Jeremy Ballard is coming from the VCU tree. So there'll be some different styles of play going forward, but we wanted to see what the best looked like right now.
That's great. And I think that's really important. I mean, I've always said, I mean, we've got to compete against the best team in our league. We're not going to play the exact same style as that team because no matter what, they're probably going to do it better than us. So we're going to always play a style that can, in some way, I don't want to say contradict them, but in some ways counter what they do. And I think there, as you said, there's a certain balance to that if you know that you're going to try and compete to be the best in your league. So it's great to hear that. Now, in terms of, you talked about coaching trees. Are you following Coach White's system, or how much of that are you tweaking? I mean, you helped develop it, so I don't want to say Coach White's system because clearly you've been with him for a while in terms of that. But in terms of coaching tree, how much of that do you take, and how much of your own personality do you get to add, and your own philosophy do you get to add?
After his first year at Louisiana Tech, he let me have the defense. So I'm really comfortable putting the defense in step by step and knowing what we want to do and things like that and going through the full process. The offensive side of it, I've never taught an offense, never put it in piece by piece. So I use a little bit of that. I worked for Mike Davis for years, who I think is one of the best offensive coaches in the country. So I'm definitely going to steal some from him. Coach Kennedy at Texas A&M, he's very much the same, where lets his guys play and do what they do well. So going to steal a little bit from everyone. And then obviously with the foundation, be it from Indiana and working for Coach Knight, players' movement, bodies moving is always tough to defend. So I'll steal a little bit from that. But for the most part, it'd be just trying to get to know what our guys do well, trying to piece it together. Someone asked what I'm going to run. I got a really good friend that's been last year was his first year job. He said, what are you going to run? And I said, well, I've got about seven different things on the board I'm going to look at. I got to wait and see who our best players are first, because to me, you decide, okay, you evaluate who are your best players, who are your best scorers, and now let's run stuff to get them in the best situation possible without overcomplicating it. So I'm not saying I'm great at it, but that's my objective. Hopefully I'll be successful.
Well, and it's a good point too that it might change because you don't fully know your roster. And I say this to new coaches all the time is that, like, even though you have an idea of how you want to play, like, if you're truly trying to compete and to build, again, some success for your players, it doesn't have to be winning, but some, whether it's development success or they feel that they're getting better, that it might have to change. You know, it might have to change halfway through the year. So you just think about running one offense and now all of a sudden we got to pivot and we got to go to another offense. Have you seen that type of flexibility from coaches before?
The last couple of years of Florida, 2 years ago, we completely scrapped what we were doing defensively halfway through the year, made three wholesale changes and instantly became better. It was the best decision we did. We really evaluated ourselves closely as a staff there with everything that we did. And we weren't afraid to say, this isn't working and it's because of what we're doing. Or sometimes it was like, we just need to do this a little bit better. But a lot of times it was, our guys didn't have a pressing mentality there. So we stopped press. We came into it that we were going to still tempo press. We were going to trap. But as a whole, our team weren't great pressers, so we scrapped pressing. We were a gap team. We switched everything coming into it. They were already really good at the gap, the pack line defense. And so we pretty much scrapped our switching because we didn't feel like there's any reason to switch in the gaps anyway. And now you're letting good players catch it comfortably with bad matchups. So we completely scrapped switching. So we've done a lot of, we changed every year after we gave certain things some time to evolve and shake out.
That's great. I think sometimes coaches are inflexible in their belief in their systems or their inbound play or whatever it is, but it could be something. I've run certain inbound plays that work for one team, and I think the next year we're going to run it, and it just doesn't work the same. The timing's not the same. The passer's not the same. There's something that changes it. And my first year as a university head coach, I coached a team that was just awful, and we didn't win a game till Christmas. And I was just, we had a little bit of a break after that, and I was just trying to figure it out. And I completely pivoted, and we went from really controlling the game because we were bad and we weren't talented to just saying, let's shoot the first shot that we would get. And we got good. Like, we got good by the end of it, that we won three of our last four. And, you know, part of that was just, again, my mistake at the beginning in thinking that we should be playing this way and then realizing that something better is suited for us. And I think that's important for coaches to understand.
No question. And that's another thing with our underneath out of bounds offense, that for a couple of years, we were in the 90s, 95 percentile synergy-wise and percentage on underneath out of bounds. And then last year, our percentages were terrible. And same thing with transition defense. For like four straight years, we were one of the best transition defensive teams in the country. And then all of a sudden, we were awful. And was it personnel? Was it that we skipped steps teaching? What was it? And then it ended up us just having to spend a lot of time on it and going back to the basics and just doing it more. And we got better by just doing the same thing more. So it's, there have been times when we scrapped what we're doing, and then there have been other times whenever we said, you know what, we're just, we probably skipped some steps.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. I mean, because it's not always the coach. You know, and I know sometimes the media portrays it as always being the coach, but it's not always the coach. We could do exactly the same thing with a different group of players in exactly the same way that worked with another group of players, and it just doesn't work the same. And that's where it falls back on us, on being flexible and creative and, you know, trying to figure it out. And I guess that the art and science that blends together in this coaching thing, that's a lot of fun. So you mentioned reading. What are some of the things that you're reading right now that are helping you continue to develop and learn? Because I know that in this whirlwind that you're going through as a new coach, new place, all that stuff, is that, you know, sometimes your personal development falls away because you're so focused on all these other items. So that's great to hear that you're doing that. What are some of the things that are inspiring you right now?
One book I'm reading, what our biggest donor, the university, is an author. So I'm reading his three books. They have absolutely nothing to do with basketball.
And great choice, by the way. Yeah, you got to read those books.
So I know when we have an alumni event, I'll have some good conversation topics with him. There's about eight buildings on campus named after him. And then the other one I'm reading is The Obstacle is the Way. And I just read maybe two chapters of it a night so I can really kind of digest. It's a book that's a quick read, but it's just, it's something that you can read and think about and chew on a couple topics. And it's a good story, so it's light reading as well. So I usually have two or three different books going at the same time. One for leisure, just to relax and free my mind. And another one where I'm really trying to think about and absorb it. The Daniel Coyle books, The Talent Code, and his new one is phenomenal. I'll reread those, or Mindset, you know, just different things that I've taken a lot of stuff over the years. I'll reread those or read my highlights.
That's great. And hopefully I can share this, but when I was at Florida, you know, this past August, and I was talking to some of Coach White's staff there and whatnot. And, you know, some of them had mentioned that when they read books, they summarize it and send it to Coach. Mm-hmm. And to help him more efficiently digest some things that they thought were useful. And I thought that was brilliant. I mean, that's obviously using your resources and almost creating type of sharing tree. And, you know, I don't know if you have that going yet, but I just thought that was an amazing idea, an amazing use of your resources. And now all I got to do is get a staff to that level to be able to do that for me here. But, you know, it's great how much you can share and save yourself time from reading a full book. So,
yeah, good Cliff Notes. The only problem with that is what jumps out to you may not jump out to me. That's the problem with when we both read the same book, I might pick out five different things than you pick out just because of where we are in our own journey.
That's a good lead into with your coaching staff. And I don't know the makeup of your staff, and we don't have to get into that, but how much open discussion do you guys have at this point? Is it a pretty open discussion, or because it's your first time as the head coach, and do you want to put your stamp and identity on things that, look, we don't have time for this discussion right now, let's do it this way and then we'll figure it out? What's the blend? What's the balance in terms of that?
That's one other thing that I've taken from Coach White. It's completely open sourced. Obviously, I have to make the decisions. But I first week on the job, one night, we were just sitting around talking, and I said, be thinking about what the best things the coaches that you've worked for have done. What are the best things they've done? And then what are some things that you felt like they didn't do well? Let me learn from what they did well and help me learn from what they didn't do well. Because it's pooling your resources. These guys have come from winning programs. They've worked for great coaches. And I'd be crazy just to have my stamp be more important than what's best right now. So in workouts, obviously the terminology side, we have to work through all that because everyone comes from different places and we coaches like to give terms to just about everything now. But yeah, without a doubt, I'm going to lean on those guys a lot and they've already helped me tremendously. That's the thing I've done best. When you talk about taking over a job, what I've done best is been able to hire guys who are really, really good at their jobs.
Right. And empowering them to be able to be involved in the process. And, it's a no-brainer to a certain extent, because obviously anything that saves you time, it saves you, you know, aggravation, whatever it may be, helps the overall program. Do you go through the same process with your players? How much empowering or how much asking of your players do you do in terms of things they like, things they don't like? You know, again, without throwing the prior staff under the bus, like, what do you get into that process at this point, or is that a later conversation as you get more comfortable with the players?
I've tried not to even talk about the last staff as much, because I think no matter what you say and where the conversation goes, it's going to be somewhat where you're trying to put a negative spin on what they did and a positive spin on what you're going to do. So really, those guys were great guys, obviously good coaches. For whatever reason, that change needed to be made. It happens to all of us as coaches. You know, every year in the NBA, half the coaches, you know, probably three quarters of NBA coaches have been fired, and they're all brilliant basketball minds. So it happens. You see NBA coaches of the year getting fired. So that's part of it. But typically, I pick the brain. I've learned more from the players I've coached than any coach's clinic, any podcast, any website, any coach. Learn more from asking guys what they saw, what are they thinking, why would you do this, why would you do that? And that, to me, has been the most educational thing I've done over the years, is just listening to players.
So when you teach them skill or you teach them a concept, are you seeking their feedback on whether they see that skill as being useful to them? Like, is that the extent we're going to in terms of the conversation that you're having with the players about some of the things you're teaching?
I think sometimes when you teach a new skill, it feels awkward. So it's more of just be patient. We'll get to the why a little bit later. But this is the first step and this is the first building block, and it's going to feel awkward for a couple of days. Now just stay with it. And we can reevaluate it later if it still doesn't feel comfortable. But even in, we're going to get you the ball here. Now, which footwork are you more comfortable with? Are you more comfortable with the reverse pivot using the perma pivot? Are you pretty good pivoting on your right leg? If you're comfortable on your right leg, I think this is the best for you. If you like this and you're more comfortable, we're fine with that. Also, it's not the NBA. You don't always have to see the entire floor. You can turn your back for a split second if you want to stay on a permanent pivot foot. So I'm open to those guys, not saying you have to do this or you have to go into your shot this way. If you're a good shooter and you hop into your shot, I'm completely fine with it.
Well, I'm a big believer in what you're saying. I mean, I don't think there's a perfect technique that has to be followed for each skill or each player or whatever that might be. So, you know, having a little bit of freedom to the player to do what they're comfortable with is probably more valuable in the end, especially based on the time and the constraints that we have as coaches to be able to develop players. So yeah, it's great that you have those conversations. In terms of, again, evaluating your league, you know, the process that you're going through, and then leading into future games, are you doing any game prep right now to be able to understand future opponents, or is that something that's going to be way down the line for you guys?
That'd be way down the line. When we had more players here in the spring, and we'll have a full roster in late June, we did a lot of playing out of 3-on-3 situations where the ball is here and now you can do this, this, or this. I don't care, but react to the defense. Take what the defense is giving. If he's forcing you here, then we're right into this. If we can get to this, do this. If he takes that away, then we're doing this. Just to get them where they're thinking and they're playing out of situations, because ideally that's what I like to do. Anything offensively, you don't have to just come off. I've worked for coaches where, why'd you fade that? Just run the play. Well, he said, no, he shot the gap. I faded into it. I knew I had a shot or drive. Well, just run the play. I've worked for guys like that. And I've always thought, give a guy different options. And when that's empowering them, where, hey, if you break this off, there's a good reason for it. Now, if you're 0-for-5 and he's 4-for-5 in the play, go ahead and be a team player and sell it like you're driving for yourself, and then play back to him because he's the hey, and maybe get him thinking about situations like that. But the guys should have freedom to play the game. It's a game. there's thinking, there's habits involved, but for the most part, guys just reacting to whatever is happening in the game.
No, I couldn't agree more. And again, as you said, that's challenging for some coaches to be able to give freedom of decision-making. And it's freedom of decision-making based on what you're saying within the structure that you're giving them, but it's still freedom. And that's a big thing. We're not talking about rolling out the balls and just doing whatever they want. It's freedom within the structure that you teach. Yeah. So, yeah.
Chris, let me ask you a question. What were your thoughts on the Rockets with all their threes the other night in Game 7 versus the Warriors? Did they have stopped shooting the threes, or should they have – they led the league. They set a record for threes made. It's what they've done all year. Got them to Game 7 against the maybe the best dynasty in years. Do you stop shooting threes and do something new, or do you just trust that they're going to start falling and you're going to get hot again?
Well, it's a great question. We could probably ask the same question of the Boston Celtics a little bit in the Game 7 as well, because, like, my philosophy is if it's open, you know, you've got to shoot it, and especially for guys that shot that shot all year. I mean, I don't know how we could second guess an open shot at that level, especially against for the Rockets. I mean, they're playing the best defensive team in the playoffs. I believe that was what the numbers are so far. So are you going to get a better shot? Are you going to create another situation? Now, where they could have started from might be my suggestion about, you know, when we're talking about getting threes, we're talking about how are you getting those threes? Mm-hmm. And the creation of those threes might have been, let's explore, you know, more rim rolls or more pocket passes before we get that three, if that's what we're ultimately going to end up with, because that's what the defense is giving us. Right. But, you know, in terms of shooting the three, I'm not against that. But that again, that's I'm a big believer that we've led our country in three-point attempts by over 100 the last 2 years. So we're similar, but how we got them in those 2 years was very different. You know, right. 1 year was very much that we had no other option, that we just didn't have an inside game. We didn't have a lot of drive and kick guys. We had to create a little bit through system and then emphasis. But then the next year, which we were a better team, not surprisingly, we were able to get them off of more penetration, off of basket cuts and off of short rolls and different things like that. So that's what I would suggest, is that maybe as a coach, explore different ways of fitting your philosophy, you know, when it's not working.
Right. And if you're going to be consistent with the approach, then the Warrior shots probably weren't very good shots either.
No, and I think both teams were, and I think that's part of the beauty of watching these games, is that I think both teams aren't playing necessarily true to their philosophy over 82 games. Yeah. That a lot of contradictions in terms of, you know, how they're playing. And it's, and that's somewhat dictated by the level and the opponent and the pressure and all those other things. But as we know, as fans or coaches watching from afar, I mean, it's easy, right?
Yeah.
We got all the answers.
Well, I'm reading on Twitter how the Warriors aren't moving the ball anymore, and they were moving the ball and they had all these passes. Well, the Rockets are switching every screen. They're switching into the passing lane. So when you're switching in the passing lane, they don't let you just swing the ball and move the ball like a gap team or a position team. So, you know, they almost forced you to do that, and the Warriors were able to take advantage of it better than the Rockets.
Well, and we can relate this. Like, if I look at a game like that Syracuse-Michigan State game in the tournament, you know, which nobody was scoring, but it didn't seem like anybody was trying to do anything particularly different either.
Right.
And we know Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. You know, and it's fascinating to me because obviously a big part of both those games is what your opponent is doing to dictate how you are. And for me, I mean, I'm a tweaker. I'm willing to try stuff in the moment. I'm willing to change stuff because, again, I don't deal with the level of talent that there's always that James Harden that can take over a game and make plays. But, you know, I would think that you just have to try and do it differently at some point. Again, maybe I'm off base, but it's a great question.
The hack of Capella ended up being huge because it forced them to take him out of the game. It got those guys out of rhythm. And then they take him out late because he's missing the free throws, and now you're putting in a bad defender who the Warriors could go after. So I thought that was ended up maybe being the biggest coaching adjustment of the game, was to simply foul Capella. And now if he makes them, it backfires, but he missed them, and, you know, the Rockets had to adjust.
He's so tremendous. Yeah, no, he's so important to them, and you're absolutely right. Without him in the game, I think it changes their dynamic quite a bit. And, you know, again, I mean, it was really interesting because I think a lot of people perceive the Houston Rockets as being this offensive juggernaut, but I think they made so many decisions for the defensive end, right? As you said, they wanted to fully switch, and they were going to switch, and they switched all year, but they wanted to fully invest in how they were going to switch. And I guess that's what will be interesting about playoffs and probably the NBA going forward next year, and whether that filters into the college game. Because by and large, a lot of the philosophy that I think has existed in the the NBA level, hasn't filtered in the NCAA game. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say that's fair to say, but also what the Warriors do and the Celtics do, I think some of it has, but for the most part, it's a completely different game. Our guys don't have the ability to stretch the floor at four or five positions like they do now in the NBA. There just aren't enough great shooters with that talent where you can play true spread positionless basketball like they do now. And we don't have the seven-footers that can go get it above the rim like Capella. I mean, some of those plays, he's off of a trampoline. So I think those, the vertical center, the guy who can go get it, and then also just the fours and fives that can shoot it from the range that those guys can, will keep us from playing like they do.
Yeah, no, some really good points to that. So, and again, I mean, we could get into a whole conversation about the differences in the game and everything like that. And as you know, we play FIBA rules, so we're a little bit closer aligned in terms of 24-second shot clock. Certainly different philosophies in terms of the game, but it is fascinating and how much you can learn from all levels of basketball. And I think that's what's tremendous about this time of year is that you see so many meaningful games at so many different levels, from the NCAA into obviously the NBA, and then with EuroLeague and the different games overseas are so important. And I just encourage coaches to watch as much as they can from other places.
No question.
So program structure, your program scope, you have a great feel for that. Your coaching philosophy, you have a great feel for that. And then recruitment and putting together your roster, you know, all those things come together. What are some of the things off the court you're doing with your players in terms of building their trust in each other and their trust in you as a coaching staff?
Shoot them a text at night, something maybe they can do a little bit better. Just checking on them daily, dropping in on their classes, maybe going on campus to the cafeteria where they eat lunch and just stopping in and maybe having lunch in the cafeteria. Just trying to do anything to spend time with them. And when we get our full roster here, we'll have the guys, we actually had a rule at Florida where the guys had to stop through the offices every single day. And it might be for 10 seconds during the season. It might be to watch your clips from practice the day before, or watch clips from the game, 3 or 4 minutes, 2 minutes, whatever the case. But they had to stop through and just, you gauge how they are that day and how they're feeling. So if they're really, really unhappy, you don't go a couple of days without seeing them. And then it kind of festers. If there's a problem, usually you can get them to open up if they trust you and you listen to their side of the story. So just trying to just hit them a little bit each day without being over the top.
Well, that's great. And I mean, people, coaches and leaders and people in the business world and teachers and everyone, you know, sometimes we talk about culture as if it's some magical thing, but really to me, culture comes down to exactly what you just said, which is that you're creating informal conversations constantly with your players so that they know you care and that you know that you're trying to help them improve and help them develop. And then there's a value to them having a relationship with you, which I think is obviously a paramount to a coach, but sometimes it's more difficult for coaches at other levels who aren't either full-time, they aren't at the school full-time, and those different things. So the strategy of texting and constantly checking in, I think is great for coaches to take away as well.
That'd be a challenge in being a head coach. I don't think it's the decisions, because as an assistant coach, you're always thinking about what you should suggest, what you should do. And then obviously you need to make the right decisions, but it's not changing the relationships of being a head coach. Because assistant coach, you're in the gym with them one-on-one. A guy's struggling, you get in the gym with them for 30 minutes the next morning. It's just a lot easier for the individual relationships, and you don't have to, you know, Florida, we had our positions, so we spent a lot of time with those guys. So you knew, had a good feel for them, and then you recruited a couple more guys. So you already had a great relationship with the head coach. It's going to be hard to have 13 great, genuine relationships that you can do based on time. So that's going to be the biggest challenge, I think, is having a great relationship with 13 guys.
Well, and it's a part of the process that when you take over a team for the first time, that you don't have players within your program that are the same type of leaders that they'll be next year when they've already gone through the year with you. They've already gone through the system. They can validate a lot of the ideas for each other. And that's really falling on you and your staff right now to be able to validate a lot of what you're doing. And, you know, that's going to be a fascinating process to be able to discuss with you a little bit, probably as we get together, hopefully next year at some point after your season, to talk about it again. Because that's the part, next year you're going to have built-in leaders that already buy into what you're doing. And this year it's all you and your staff selling it to them initially.
Yeah. And a couple of the guys we've signed, we love their talent and what they are, but we also signed them because of their intangibles. They have great leadership qualities. We try to get guys that love the game and guys that came from winning programs. Those were the two things that were really the criteria, were we recruited athletes at Louisiana Tech because we wanted to be more athletic. We wanted to press. We wanted to play faster. Where this recruiting cycle was like, all right, what's really important to us? And it was guys who love the game and guys who have won and know what it takes to win.
That's an awesome point. And that's going to be fascinating, as I said, to watch. And, you know, I'm really excited for you, Coach. I mean, I've very few coaches can I say that I wish I had way more time to talk to you in person when we're down in Florida. That was awesome to connect with you and be able to have those conversations with you. And I know we share a love of the game and we can geek out on basketball all day. So I'm going to follow you guys closely. And anything else you want to add for coaches that are listening?
Well, Coach, I don't know if I have any desire to visit you in Windsor. I would love to host you in Boca sometime. It's a nice place to vacation and come down and talk ball anytime. But no, just really, really excited to have this opportunity, especially in a unique place like this where it's an athletic department that's really growing, a president that's committed to winning, an athletic director that's going to do whatever it takes for us to be successful. And obviously what Lane Kiffin's done in football, it can be done here. So really excited just to have a blank canvas and, you know, be in a place where there's a lot of room for growth.
Great, Coach. I mean, again, you're going to have a great, great time building that program down there. And you're absolutely right. Already scheduled a visit in the middle of the winter to come see you there, better than coming here. Where can coaches follow you on Twitter, Coach?
Coach Dusty May at Twitter. I don't provide a lot of original content. I'm jealous of you in that area. I need to do better. But yeah, I'll be more active during the season.
Well, again, just to stay connected to your program and follow your progress. And, you know, I'm cheering for you, Coach. I'm looking forward to your success. And I can't wait to see you guys develop and improve that program. So thanks for taking the time.
Coach, and thank you for the basketball immersion stuff. You inspire some thought almost every single day on Twitter. I get on your website. I've even looked at some of your drills. And a couple of them look familiar from what the Florida Clinic last year when we connected. So really excited to keep learning from you, Coach. I appreciate what you do.
Awesome. Thanks. To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.